his nurse or the tech walked in and said, okay, take off your pants. And I said, I love when you dirty talk to me. Because like, what are you supposed to say to that? Like, say hello. You can't just say like, drop your pants. If you have any questions, let me know. Drop your pants.
Welcome back to the Chronically Positive Podcast, the show where we dive deep into the raw, real, and often misunderstood world of chronic illness. I talk with incredible people who have taken life's toughest challenges and turned them into something meaningful, whether that's through advocacy, art, humor, or simply surviving with strength and grace. Today's guest is someone who truly embodies that mission. I'm so excited to welcome Anna Snapp, an actor, writer, content creator, certified peer support specialist, and medical and mental health educator based between Philly and New York. Anna's work is powerful because she uses her own story to spark real conversations about chronic illness, mental health, and the medical system. She's trained and performed internationally, and she's written and performed 2 one-woman shows that explore these topics in such a moving and human way. Anna's work challenges stigma and brings humanity back into conversations where it's often lost. And I can't wait for you to hear our conversation. Before we get started, please make sure to leave a review, subscribe to the YouTube channel. It really helps get these stories out to people who can really relate to them. Without further ado, let's meet Anna. Thank you so much for wanting to be on the show, Anna.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to have you here. So we haven't known each other for that long.
We haven't. And this is our first time meeting, which is like fabulous. We love it.
We've known each other for like 5 minutes.
But it also is cool that you can meet people on the internet now. It used to be like such a weird thing. Like when you watch TV shows from the late 90s, early 2000s, it was made fun of, but now it's like I've met so many friends and like colleagues over
And no kidnapping or anything scary.
Well, not yet, but I'm still scared. I have an hour left here.
You're not leaving.
What a little noise. Yeah, no, it's really cool, and I'm so glad I saw your page. And
I know I followed you, and then you I wouldn't have known that we had this similarity connection because your account is so funny. So people watching, I found, and you probably, if you know Anna, I've seen her video of her nacho video, which I just thought was so, I don't know, because you're just so nonchalant, is I think is what my thought was just so funny.
Well, the comments too were like, people were gaslighting each other in the comments, which I found was so funny, because then people would get mad and be like, what is she saying? Like, what she's lying, like, you know, anyway. But yeah, no, I used to have the Instagram handle for my one woman shows about all of this in my profile, and then I couldn't get logged into it. And I hadn't updated it for a while, so I didn't want it on my bio. But yeah, I need to put some more stuff at the top because, you know, people don't know. And it is such a big part of me. So
yeah. Well, now they're going to know.
Now they're going to know.
If they listen. I got to go.
Listen up.
Okay. You've done so much. I guess it's important to know, like, how you got into what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So basically, I'm 34, but when I was 18, I left for college, and within like a month, I started having a bunch of sort of issues with my body where I was having these various symptoms that weren't normal for me, or at least they weren't normal, but they weren't normal for me. Certainly in my life, I had never experienced that. And I think when I was 18, not only was I adjusting to freshman year at college, which was a hard transition for me, but I was also just like, you know, when you have a symptom and you're like, okay, this might go away. This might go away.
It's
a weird, but like also the body is weird and sometimes it does things. And I think I ignored it for a while. And so maybe like a couple months later towards the end of the semester, I had gotten to a point where I couldn't even keep food down. I was like throwing up all the time. I was so sick, and I had to withdraw because I got hospitalized. And at the time I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease and with pancreatitis. So it was at the same time, which I'm not sure if you've ever...
I know pancreatitis is like really brutal and painful.
It's honestly... And it had gotten to a point where it was that bad where my amylase and lipase levels, which are kind of the levels that they test for to see if you have pancreatitis, they were so high that I was in the hospital for weeks.
Oh my God.
And so that was hard getting that diagnosis of Crohn's disease, but also the pancreatitis. And that sort of was the beginning of like the rest. So also what happens in your late teens, early 20s is if you have bipolar disorder, it does manifest at that age specifically. And I had always dealt with mental health struggles from a young age, like age 10.
Always struggling.
Always struggling. Driving the struggle bus. But it developed. So first it was anxiety and ADHD, and then it was depression. But then the mania came in, and you can't be on the same medications for depression as you can be on for bipolar one.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, for instance, antidepressants will make you manic. So it's a big transition. And then when I was 19, I was sexually assaulted. And I sort of blocked that out of my mind, but I think it contributed to my other health issues. So my gut got worse. I was also had Lyme disease at one point. Just so many different infections in my gut, like E. coli, C. diff, H. pylori, candida. I had parasites. I had mold in my body. I had all these things. And it was kind of one of those nonstop hospitalization, ER trip, doctor's office. I had to drop out of school on 3 different medical leaves.
Right.
Which is that was actually kind of a blessing because I don't think it was the school for me.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it all kind of came to a head. I had to go to the Mayo Clinic in 20, I guess it was 2015, because I was in so much body pain. I couldn't walk. I couldn't do anything. And so my parents basically were like, we've exhausted our options in the D.C. area. And Philly area, because I was in Philly at the time, back and forth between the two cities. And they were like, let's go to the Mayo Clinic because they can figure this out. So I went there and I went to all these different tests. And finally I went to a fibromyalgia specialist. I'm not sure how familiar you are with fibromyalgia, but 30% of patients with Crohn's actually have it.
I didn't know.
Yeah. And I had no idea either. And so I do the physical exam. I'm in the doctor's office with my dad and the doctor says, and I just started having some PTSD symptoms, but not really clocked them.
Right.
And they said, have you ever experienced a trauma? And I was next to my dad, and I hadn't really shared that at the time. And
right.
I said, no. And then after, I said, Dad, can you leave the room? I just want to talk to the doctor alone. And I told the doctor, and she just went. Because trauma can cause fibromyalgia, and it makes it worse.
Yeah.
And once I actually did all these years of I went in and out of mental health residential treatment, too, and then I went back for my PTSD, and once I was like really had no longer had PTSD symptoms, most of my fibromyalgia pain went away.
Wow.
And I'm on medication still, obviously for maintenance, but it was one of those things where it was like the mind body connection was so crazy. And I think that is something that is not, especially at the time when I was sick, 2009 to 2015, mostly the mind body connection, especially in like gastroenterology, is not talked about the same as it is now. I almost sometimes wonder if I were diagnosed with all of this in 2025, how my experiences might have been different.
I'm such a believer in like mind or body follows the mind.
Yeah. And like, also just like your gut is the brain of the body. So like, even if you don't have a gastrointestinal disorder, illness, people have all sorts of autoimmune issues. They'll have gut issues because, as you might know, like just because it is so connected. So the same neurotransmitters that are released in your brain are released in your gut. So it is called like the brain of the body.
Right.
But yeah, so just over the years, I had the worst Crohn's flare up to date when I was back in school in 2017 to 2019. But I think at that point, like it was really hard and I had to go through all these different medications and treatments, but the crisis years were the worst.
Yeah.
Because it was another crisis, but I was older. I had a little bit more experience dealing with the medical system.
Yeah.
That aspect of it stressed me out less.
And you also knew kind of what was causing. You were diagnosed with certain things at that point. It wasn't like this mystery thing.
Yeah. And obviously, like being diagnosed is such a crazy thing because it's just your whole world changes automatically.
Yeah.
And I find that doctors often don't acknowledge that they're dropping bombs when they say that.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? They'll sort of be like, you have Crohn's. I got a dip for lunch. You know what I mean? You're like, what just happened? There's like human on the other side of the table.
You just informed me of a life altering illness that I'm going to deal with for the rest of my life.
You actually just changed my life for the worse. but I, so basically, sorry, that was kind of a long way of saying
no,
all that,
it was all important.
But I, once I was coming out of my PTSD, I wrote an autobiographical one woman show called I Found That the Sun Will Rise Tomorrow. And I had actually gotten that title because in art therapy class in residential mental health treatment in Illinois, we didn't have phones, we didn't have TVs, we were journaling, crying, and knitting all day.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point we were in art therapy and I was just like taking pieces, different words from magazines, and I put those words together. And I started writing a show that had started based on journal entries from treatment, but then it sort of snowballed. I performed it at the Silver Spring Black Box first in 2016. Then Capital Fringe in D.C., Edinburgh Fringe in Scotland. I performed it off-Broadway at the United Solo Theater Festival. It really did really well. And then I randomly got picked up by the medical community. So I started performing for med students, doctors, nurses, PA students, mental health professionals. And basically the setup would be I'd perform that show and then I would do kind of a talk back or a panel discussion afterwards, sometimes a little workshop. And that sort of spread to national medical conferences, things like that. And then before the pandemic, one of my sort of mentors in the space was like, hey, our second year med students at Hofstra University as a part of Northwell Health in New York have an eating disorder unit. And we wanted to know if you would create some programming for that. And I said, that'd be great. I had dealt with an eating disorder in the past that was trauma induced. And so I interviewed over 400 people over lockdown during the pandemic virtually and about their experiences battling an eating disorder. And I created a verbatim theater piece. Do you know what verbatim theater is? So it's not a lot of people do because it's kind of niche, but basically you conduct interviews, you record them, you get them transcribed or transcribe them yourself. And then you look at the whole interview. Sometimes they were hours long and you cut them down into a monologue that you think captures the essence of that person. Oh. And then you recreate their voice on stage.
So, I've seen it. I just didn't know the term for it. So I love that.
As an actor, she is like the queen of it.
Yes. Okay. I've seen her do it.
So I basically told the stories of 9 different people out of that that group and my own and wove them in together. And it's called It's Not About the Damn Food, which is sort of,
I love that,
kind of saying it's not about the food, obviously. Yeah. And also kind of battling some of the miseducation and misunderstanding, misconceptions around eating disorders. And sort of I tie in sort of my own experience with fat phobia in the world and how that obviously feeds into several eating disorders, not all of them. But that premiered in 2022. And then I'm actually performing both this fall. One is at the autobiographical show will be in Philly at Cannonball Festival through the Philly Fringe. 4 performances in September. And then I actually, from a viral video on Instagram, someone scrolled through my profile, found out about It's Not About the Damn Food. And he is the director of the food and nutrition studies grad students at NYU at the Steinhardt School.
Oh my gosh.
And so it's going to be through an interdisciplinary event between, you know, that department as well as the drama therapy department. And I think there is sort of some connection to part of their programming in verbatim theater. So it's kind of going to be a cool event. It's set more up in that kind of medical performance style.
So amazing. Hey, Spoonies. Quick break from the episode to tell you about something really special I've been working on. Chronic For You Circle. Chronic For You Circle is a creative, low-pressure support space for people with chronic illness to come together, connect, and reflect through guided art-based activities. You don't need any art skills. You don't need to share more than you're comfortable with. You just need to show up as you are, messy, tired, flared, and fabulous. Our next session is happening Sunday, July 13th from 3 to 4 p.m. EST. And the theme is grief. Living with chronic illness often comes with a deep grief. For the person you were before, for the things you used to be able to do, and for the life you thought you'd have. In this session, we'll gently hold space for that grief while also honoring the strength, growth, and identity we've built since getting sick. We'll get a guided worksheet, creative prompts, and the chance to connect with people who truly get it. To sign up or learn more, check the link in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Could not be in school. And there just was such a level of like, not only was I deeply physically sick, but I was also going through all this different mental health stuff. And the combo was kind of deadly. And I mean, there were times where I just didn't have the will to live mentally. Didn't think I would survive certain infections that I had, because they did tell me, especially when I got E. coli and C. diff, that they had been in my body for so long that some doctors didn't even test for, which is kind of basic bacteria. But yeah, it was really hard. I mean, I think that I, of course, wouldn't wish my experiences on other people, but I'm so grateful I have them. You know, like I wouldn't trade my life for another person's life, because I got the greatest gifts out of it. Like I feel like there's kind of this, I broke into the best person I could be because of the worst things that happened to me.
Yeah.
And that no one can take that away from me. You know, there's a lot of people in this world that are going to, I don't know, shit on you on the internet or try to take you down or dim your shine. It's like, you can't touch this. Like, you can't touch this. This is mine. Yeah. This is my story. And I made something out of it. And I feel really proud of it, you know? Not what I expected.
Like no, you said, I couldn't agree more, because I always say I don't think I would have ever tapped into my creativity as much mm-hmm. as I have if I didn't get sick.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have done half of the things I've been doing. I would be a therapist mm-hmm. and I would be working with young children. I wouldn't have time to teach myself how to do a podcast or embroider. It would just be in a completely different life. Is that a bad thing? No. But I love this life so much, even though I'm sick. I just love it so much. Yeah.
And I am a better actor because of it. Like, the way that you have to, you know, embody another human or put yourself in the shoes of another human, I'm so much more empathetic than I could have ever been without these experiences. Because I, especially in terms of, I'm sure you experience this in your day-to-day life working or with friends or whatever, is like, people are not always going to understand. And you're not in the club until you're in the club, whatever club that is. It could be a million clubs that we're all in, depending on how many illnesses we have. But, you know, people don't, it is not considered a legitimate excuse to take off sick, you know, whatever. Every time I've gotten COVID, and I'm vaxxed, and every time I've gotten COVID, it's been pretty horrible. The first time I had to go to the hospital. And so people don't, I think, even when I have a cold, it's so bad. And so that's hard to tell someone, like tell my previous boss, like, hey, like, it's not just a cold where I can work and type away. Like, I'm in bed. I'm not just, you know how so many people are just like, I have a cold, I'm going out. I'm like, I can't do that when I immunosuppressed and immunocompromised. It's just not a possibility.
Yeah, I think, as we all know, everyone listening, invisible illness, it's like, you can't see it, you can't understand it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also what was tricky is that my physical illness was often invisible and my mental illness was not. Like, it was just not. I mean, I really, like, I think one of the hardest things that I still have to grapple with is I lost basically all my friends from that era of my life. Hmm. People either, I was too much, I was too sick, I was too crazy, whatever, fill in the word for my...
Whatever they felt.
Kind of, you know, being so traumatized and being so mentally ill at that time. And so I think I'm now back in Philly, and that's where a lot of that happened. So I've had to sort of reclaim my relationship with the city because it represents a really dark time for me.
Right.
So I moved back. I lived in New York for 7 years, and then I moved back to Philly last year. And it's been an interesting journey because also it's a smaller city. You're going to run into people who are still there from that era. And I think I definitely know how I contributed to some of these dynamics. And I sincerely could not help it. You know, I was so tunnel vision, feeling suicidal, feeling depressed, feeling like being sick. And it's like I couldn't even hear any of the noise around me.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even really realize how I was affecting my family and my friends at the time. It didn't matter because I could barely survive. Like, I could barely hold on.
Right.
So it took me years into performing my autobiographical show, I realized, it's like, I have to sort of add something in here about how I was affecting people in my life. Because even if I didn't think I was in the driver's seat, there was an aspect of me at least sitting in the front seat. And there are certain things I couldn't control, but that doesn't mean I'm not affecting other people.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was traumatizing for my parents to watch me overdose at one point, to watch me self-harm, to watch me have PTSD when I was living at home and I'd have flashbacks and nightmares and like to see me in physical pain. Like, that's not, my parents would always say, you're only doing as well as your kids are doing. And I think that's like I understood that intellectually at the time, but I didn't really hit me till later.
Yeah.
In a healthy place.
Everything you're saying hits home.
It's also like especially hard at such a young age to go through any type of trauma. And I consider the medical stuff trauma too. Medical trauma is so real. And I think people don't realize that the experience of being in this healthcare system that's so broken is traumatic in itself.
Yeah.
Being poked and prodded, being doing tests and being hospitalized, and residential mental health treatment is its own thing too. Like you are surrounded by people that are also unwell, and you have to like stay focused. You will embrace the community and stay focused.
Right.
On getting better. And so, you know, obviously, right,
and
you
there's
know,
like people around you doing destructive behaviors and you're like,
oh yeah,
I'm focused on myself. Yeah. I'm not gonna do this.
It's so crazy. You're like, I guess I'm going to sit here and just be in my feels and cry because we couldn't do anything else.
Make friendship bracelets.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah, gosh, it was a crazy era of that. And
how old were you when you went?
Well, so I first went when I was, I guess, 22.
Okay.
And that was mostly for my bipolar disorder and my eating disorder. And then because, so I was raped in 2010, but I didn't get PTSD till 2014. My brain like completely blocked it out.
Didn't kick in until.
Didn't kick in at all. Wow. Like at all. I mean, I think there were probably ways it showed up, but not at the intensity it was. Right. Where I couldn't even like leave the house or drive sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went back for like more like trauma therapy in January of 2015. And then I transferred to another place in like a few months later. And then I ended up coming home and just working with my childhood therapist who knew me so well. And I did an intensive outpatient with her. So it wasn't at the level of residential or even, you know, partial hospitalization program, but it was ultimately the most helpful thing because she knew me since I was 10 and I was 23 to 25 at the time. So
I did the same thing because I had the same childhood therapist. And like when I would like go years of being fine.
Yeah.
And then not fine and go right back to her and like just kind of pick up from where we left off. But so I went when I was 13. So we probably had very different experiences.
Yeah. There was a unit for like adolescents at the treatment centers I went to. And I remember feeling so deeply for them because they're different types of sad. Like, you know, I would see people in their 60s and 70s in my unit and I would just be like, oh my God, how painful is it to not be able to deal with this until now? And there's no age limit on like healing, obviously, but I was incredibly privileged to be able to see a therapist starting at age 10. It's incredibly privileged to be on my parents' insurance at the time that I was sick.
Right.
Incredibly privileged to have parents that believed in therapy and didn't consider it a weakness that
went
hard for me in every way.
Yeah.
And so I just recognized too, especially with the mental health arena, it's like, there is a lot of stigma and there is a lot of judgment and there's a lot of not believing in the legitimacy of it.
Yeah.
And if you are chronically ill with like a physical illness, I think you should be in therapy if you have the resources, you know, and not everyone does this world. But like, if you do, I'll never believe that when I've had friends say like, I graduated therapy, so I stopped. I'm like, okay, you know, like you graduated therapy. What do you mean? We always have something to work on. Like, and especially if you were mentally ill, chronically ill and with physical illness, it's just so important because your body, you're living in the body that feels like it's betraying you. What are you supposed to do besides talk to someone about it?
Absolutely. And like, besides having chronic illness or a diagnosed mental illness, life is so hard.
Yeah.
Like, it is so hard.
Yeah.
Like, everyone should have someone to talk to that's unbiased. Everyone should be in therapy. I don't care how mentally well you are.
Yeah, and also, like, how mentally well are any of us? Do we see what's happening in the world? Like,
how
can
you be?
I don't understand that. And I also recognize that, like, there are people who want to and can't. And I wish that was something that was more, like, globally normalized to be. Because I've met people from all over the world at this point who, especially because one of the colleges that I ended up being at was an international school. So like I met people from all over the world and there were such different perspectives on what therapy or even crying meant.
Right.
Crying is a weakness. You know, you don't, and especially like understanding the importance of insulin and not understanding the importance of like antidepressants, antipsychotics.
Right.
It's like, I need my immunosuppressant for my Crohn's and my fibromyalgia medication. And I need to not go off the rails and I need to take my psychiatric medicine every day. Right. They're all connected, you know? So
it's all intertwined.
Yeah.
So obviously I found you on social media.
Yeah.
When did that start? What was your first angle when you first started posting?
You know, what's funny is that I had actually, before Instagram was even really what it is now, or even before TikTok existed, the way that I was found by the medical community is that I had a Facebook business page for my show. That's how I did advertising in like 2015.
Wow.
Because Instagram had only been around for a few years at that point. It was all photos. It was all with weird filters. Like it wasn't like a thing. Like, and so there's not like what it is today with mostly reels.
Well, reels were a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stories weren't even a thing at that time. Yeah. And so that's how I was found. I also did some blogging with HuffPost And then I always liked social media, like even from a young age when it was just AIM or MySpace or Zanga or whatever. Like I always loved those things. I maybe because I'm a little love some attention as an actor, but I do love attention. But then I really started. I had so many friends that were like, you need to do TikTok. You need to do this. Like, you have so many funny things.
Yeah.
And I started doing it on TikTok and Instagram just like lightly a few years ago. And then I've had a few viral series that have sort of set the next level for me. Yeah. And then with, I'm not sure if you saw like the Bucking videos.
They went. Yes. Yes. So
those like set me into a new thing. And I just signed with social media management basically because of it, because I grew from like, I guess a total of like across platforms, 40,000 followers to now like 120,000, like within a few months. Like,
wow.
It really
Congratulations.
Is
That's awesome.
It truly just takes like one video, honestly. Like it can literally be anything and it's always what you don't expect. But anyway, so I found a creative outlet in that, which has been fun because yeah, I do like dumb comedy stuff, but also I think there's people really react well to the body positive content mm-hmm. and like the confidence content and like the confident, the content about just like being real about all this stuff, because so many people go through it, but like, I understand it, but I'm so used to talking about it at this yeah. point that it doesn't faze me and I'm not activated or re-triggered by talking about it. I get emotional about it, but I don't feel, it's just emotional because of my connection to it and my, how proud I am of myself and how happy and grateful I am to be healthy.
Right.
So, you know. Yeah, so it's sort of, it's connected because social media is a good outlet. Like you found, like
yeah.
people really connect, especially even if it's a really specific illness that maybe not that many people have it. And people are like, oh my God, I didn't know you had this. They're in my DMs saying, this happened to me. I never could have the courage to speak up.
Yeah.
And I'm no better for maybe having the courage, because when I wrote my shows, the only way I knew how to express myself was through theater at the time. I was like, I have to write about this. I have to perform about this. And that's what feels most natural. And I think yeah. like doing what's most authentic to how you express yourself or how you heal is going to be the best thing for you. Like whenever you show up authentically as yourself, people appreciate that. So I think that's like, even if it's kind of like, I don't take offense. I've gotten really great feedback about my shows, but there's obviously people that are not, it's not going to, they're not going to take to it.
You can't,
but also everyone. That, for some reason doesn't offend me because it's my story. I'm telling the truth. Like, I don't know. I can't change that. It's a, and yeah. yeah, there's an artistic angle and there's the writing, but it's just what happened. So it's a little bit different maybe than if I had written like a fictional piece where it's like, oh, they're attacking the way I wrote the characters.
Right.
So I'm not attacking,
no, just attacking my personal life.
But you know, sort of like, I don't know. It's like, I'm so proud of it that I just don't,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because I've had so many people come up to me afterwards and be like, I had no idea you went through this. I've been through this and this. Like, I'm, thank you so much. And that means so much to me. And even just having the ability to maybe have an effect on a med student and how they go about not just learning the science, but learning the empathy, learning the human side of medicine.
Yeah.
That's like, that is a privilege. That is a privilege to be able to hopefully make a difference. And because they're not going to remember your story in 10 years, but they're going to remember how your story made them feel. And you can't, like, that can't be replicated with an anatomy class.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, so.
That's so yeah. important because so many people in the chronic illness community, there's so much trauma just, even mm-hmm. with a nurse or a doc, like, mm-hmm. the way you're spoken to, the way you're listened, it's completely affects your healing and your treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so discouraging. Like, even one bad doctor appointment has literally just like set me into a spiral, like
yeah.
never gonna get better. No one's ever gonna listen to me. No one's ever gonna figure out what's wrong with me. And then
because they'll tell you that. They'll literally say, we don't know what's wrong.
No.
They'll be like, we don't know what to do. And you're like, well, I guess I'll see myself out.
Pack my bags and live my life.
I guess I'm gonna head now. You know, I mean, it just, a lot of doctors won't give you hope. They'll say they can't do anything. And that's right. why I ended up going to the Mayo Clinic at one point, because they didn't test for the things they needed to, you know?
Right. And they won't take that extra mile because it's yeah. like, oh, you're young, you're healthy. Like, why would anything be wrong with you?
Yeah. And it's always meant so much to me when I've had doctors who spend time with me, look to me in the eyes, ask me, low bar, but ask me, how are you doing?
I'm like, can I marry you?
I know. There's so many doctors who walk in and they're just like, okay, here's your chart. Like, you know, they don't even make connection with you. And just, they don't care about, I mean, some doctors I love that they won't care about if they're late to the next appointment. I'd rather have them be with me. It's like, if I have questions, like I need them answered. You spending 5 minutes with me instead of maybe 35 minutes with me makes such a difference in how I perceive that treatment and how I experience it. And then how I feel mentally leaving the doctor's office. Like you said, it's like, there are great doctors and there are some that aren't so great.
Yeah. Well, it's like, even if you have that 30 minute conversation where they listen to all your questions, they give you empathy and they still don't know at the end, that's okay because they've taken that time and they've given you that empathy. Not every doctor is going to know what's wrong with you.
And just saying, I'm sorry you're going through this, takes no effort and it makes someone's day, because not like, everyone in their personal lives might be validating them.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, that sounds really tough. Like, I can't, that is a very rare thing to hear from a doctor. My doctor, I saw a new doctor a month ago and she said that, and like, I literally just started welling up with tears. I'm like, it's really hard.
Oh, yeah. When I finally went into remission of my Crohn's disease after 15 years of struggling with it, I like cried to the doctors who helped me get there, because they really dove in and like dug into all the possible routes to healing. And I think they were surprised, like, that someone was crying. And I was like, oh, no, you don't understand. Like, this is, it's been a long road.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they'll remember that forever. And they'll tell you, like, I want to make someone feel that happy again.
Yeah.
So you're performing your one-woman show. Mm-hmm. What else do you do? So you're an actor. Is that what you identify as? Yes, is it a career?
I do. I have an acting agent. So she'll submit me for TV, film, theater, voiceover, and commercials. And so I'll get auditions through that. And that's what's nice is post-pandemic, you can really audition from anywhere and submit a self-tape. And so I can submit something for New York. I'm considered a local hire, even being in Philly.
Oh.
Or I can go to LA or wherever they're filming. And a lot of the industry is kind of moving towards the East Coast, which is cool. They're building a mega Netflix studio in New Jersey.
Wow.
Like, it's a whole thing. They just, on the old Army base in Fort Monmouth. So I do that. I also worked as a peer support specialist. Do you know what that is?
I wanted to ask you about
that. It's basically, it's a type of counselor where you are using your lived experience with mental health conditions to help another person on the road to recovery. So I worked with clients that were, and they could have had a mental illness. So I didn't work as much with folks with substance misuse struggles, because it's not what I've dealt with.
Right.
But you have these sort of, like, you know, it's not therapy, but it's counseling sessions, and you're not there to inspire them or lead them down the road. You're sort of like, you're kind of walking alongside them and showing them an example of recovery and healing.
Right.
And I wish I had had that when I'm back back when. But yeah, so I've done that for a while. And then I randomly had just some, you know, remote day job for a few years. And then now leaning more into social media, doing some just like part-time, just like virtual assistant work and stuff. Cause I have to, you know, have that as a backup, as, you know, many actors do.
Right.
But yeah, trying to lean more into the social media stuff now too.
I love social media.
I know, I love social media. It is crazy though. Like, sometimes I'm just like, why are you sending me a death threat, Todd? Like, all I did was like, say that I'm happy. Like, I will never get the internet people's desire to put other people down, especially if you're fat on the internet. Oh, you get so much stuff. Like, and, or even, you could say anything though. You could say anything. I could be like, I love your outfit. And someone will be like, well, I hate blue or like purple. And you're like, okay.
What I always say is, like, you know, you've made it when you're getting hate. Cause like, if you have a little video that gets not many views, not many likes, you're not getting hate comments on that, but you know, your video is doing well and people
bring it in, haters.
When Todd with no profile picture and one follower is like saying,
oh, yeah. And it's really bold of you to not have a profile picture or have your profile in private, but then leave hate comments. Like, at least show me your face.
They're there to troll. All they're doing on social media is commenting on viral videos, trolling comments.
I also love when they write a paragraph about how much they don't care about me. And I'm like, but you're spending time to write a paragraph about how much you don't care. That sounds right. But
no. I love clapping back at comments. Someone commented, what did they say? Oh, POTS isn't a big deal. Oh, POTS. I see POTS is trendy these days. And then I did this whole post. I was like, pretending to call someone. I was like, did you know that having a heart rate of 200 is trending? Did you know that fainting and cracking
everyone
head of-
get on board. Like, no, it's crazy.
It gives you content.
Well, it
bad
does.
Trolls
it does.
Give content, so thank you.
Yeah, it's like, thank you so much. Fan behavior. But no, but it really is. It's like, I'm living rent-free in your mind. I mean, I think about you when you comment that you leave my mind.
Yeah.
But it is really, I guess I'll also never get the desire by someone to talk about another person's health status. That is crazy behavior to me. Like, what do you mean? You can't look at anyone and tell necessarily what all of their health looks like. We all have different bodies. And I think, like we were talking about earlier, you're going to experience POTS very differently from another person.
Oh my gosh.
Even if it's the same illness, it's just a different experience. And so I just think, especially with, you know, bodies, like I make a really big attention not to comment, unless it's positive and welcomed, to not make comments about people's bodies or what their appearance in general. So I would never comment on anything about body size, anything about what they're eating, how much they're eating, how little they're eating. You don't know what someone's going through.
It's none of your business.
And not commenting on someone's weight or like if they, you know, when someone says like, oh, you don't look so good. Like you look sick. It's like, I had 3 hours of sleep. Like I'm fine. Or I'm just not wearing makeup. Like,
right.
What are you saying? I just think it's so important because that might be really sensitive for someone who's going through like a flare up of their illness. They may not look right or look not right. They may not look like their normal self. And they may not look, they might be really depleted. And
like, they know, like by you saying like, oh, you don't look well. It's like, shit, really?
You're like, oh my God.
I guess it's because I know what I felt so ill. I just,
I was throwing up all night, but thank you for the announcement. Like, I don't know.
Now, yeah, validated.
Yeah.
No, totally. I think I saw this video. It's like, if it's something you can't change in like 30 seconds, which I still think is like, you just don't comment on people in general. It's just...
Don't comment. And I sometimes I'll even say to people, I'm like, are you open to a compliment about like this? Because you just have to be careful. Even if it's just like, oh my God.
Some people don't like compliments.
Yeah. And also like, I have friends where we know our rapport and I'll be like, your body looks amazing in that dress. Like, but I try also not to tie it to... whether you look thin or not.
Right.
And also, when you're sick, a lot of people get thinner. It might be a sensitive topic, or they might get bigger. I had steroids. I was on steroids for so long.
Yeah.
On and off for so, so long. It made me gain so much weight.
Yeah.
And yeah. I came to a place where I, like, love my body because it's a map of my survival.
Right.
I'm the most confident I've ever been in my life, and I'm the happiest, and I'm the biggest I've ever been. And people can't seem, especially on the internet, can't seem to wrap their head around that. But like, right. I would never, how could I not love the body that got me through it? Because for so long, my perspective was, my body's betraying me. Why is my body doing this to me? And now it's like, oh, but my body kept me alive. Kept me alive during the assault. It kept me alive in the aftermath.
Right.
I pushed through. My body pushed through. That's a gift. And like, you know, so when haters on the internet are like, you're fat, I'm like, okay, that's not a bad word to me.
Right.
So.
We have a lot of nice to see alive.
I'm alive, actually, because I didn't think I'd make it to my 30s.
Right,
so.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it is, yeah, it's just, it's the gratitude I feel is so unmatched.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I was in a place where, like, I was kind of a negative cloud of energy. Not my fault. I was going through a lot.
Right.
But now it's like depths. I really choose to find the humor, find the joy in these things. And just like sort of like being grateful for being alive when I never and proud. So proud. But yeah.
And like how you're saying, like how you affect, like now you're affecting people in such a positive way. And like, you're so stinking funny. Like, you, like you, like your video the other day and my parents back, I'm just doing it.
I'm the funniest person I know.
When I first started watching it, like you got me. I was like, you got me. Cause I was like, okay, maybe it's a serious post, you know, you never know. And I was like,
my friends are so annoyed by me. Because I'll be like, help. I need question. I have a question. And they're like, what, Anna? I'm like, should I buy rosé or Sauvignon Blanc? And they're like, Anna, get out of here. The girl who cried wolf. But, you know. So that's why sometimes I'll be like, it's an emergency. And they're like, is it? Like, I don't believe you. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm actually in the ER. No, here's me in an IV. Like, I'm
but you're oxygen. Still going to make it funny.
Oh, no, no, I literally am on oxygen. The nurse is ignoring me. It's fine. But they also, I can understand why nurses are like, stop asking us when we're going to see the doctor, when you're going to see the doctor. Because in the ER, I know it's hard, but we're all like,
excuse me,
can I have a pain med? I feel like I'm going to die. So can you just come here real quick?
Oh, my God, I hate the ER
so
much.
The ER's the worst.
I went last week, and I was like, can my dad come back with me? And they're like, no. I'm like, well, I need him to.
Well, actually, no, he can't.
And they're like, sorry, he can't. I'm like, well, how can I make this happen? Like, you might have to wait another 3 hours. I'm like, how does that make sense?
I love that they're pre-mad at you.
Like, they were mad at me for wanting my dad to be with me. I'm like, why does that make me a bad person?
Because they're so, like, linked into protocol that they can't understand the emotional side of it, which is weird. Like, I've had nurses come up to me, and they're immediately like, like, what? Once I had to get like a transvaginal sonogram for like a cyst I had on my ovary, this nurse or the tech walked in and said, okay, take off your pants. And I said, I love when you dirty talk to me. Because, like, what are you supposed to say to that? Like, say hello. You can't just say, like, drop your pants.
So, like, I'm going to leave. Can you, like,
you're like, okay, I'm going to give you a second. Here's a gown. Like, oh, sorry. Here's like a gown to put over your like lower body. Like, if you have any questions, let me know. Drop your pants.
What did they say when you said?
They did not laugh. Sheila did not laugh. And I'll never forget Sheila because she was already mad when she walked in.
Did she just say nothing?
She just was sort of like, and then it's like, you know how there's some doctors that at least say like, my hands are going to be cold. If you're going to put any sort of like probe or something into a body, like you have to be like, hey, so I'm going to do this now. The same way that now people are more trauma-informed to say, like, can I touch your shoulders or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, you got to warn someone. You have to be like, I'm going to put the needle in just a moment.
No, I made a post about this because I went to the ENT, like, 6 months ago for this ear issue as a habit.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, I'm going to take a microscope and look in your ear. So he just pours rubbing alcohol down my ear, and I get the worst vertigo. I literally feel like I'm falling off the face of the earth. Like, you could have said, like, okay, I'm putting this in. You might get a little dizzy. Nothing. I'm like, holy shit, I'm dying. And my dad, I'm pulling on my dad. I'm like, I'm falling. He's like, you're not falling. I'm falling.
Also, vertigo is the worst. I've had that on and off over the years, and it is insane. That is something you have to warn someone about if that's possible. Because you're going to your ears.
No, and I've had vertigo before.
Yeah.
It was insane.
You can't even get up. You can't open your eyes.
But like just laying there like, oh, da, 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 holy shit. Like,
yeah.
Tell your patients what to expect. And like the room spinning's like, oh yeah, that's normal. I'm like, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for the update.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh, gosh.
So reeling it back, when did you know that like you wanted to get into acting? Were you a funny kid? Did you act as a child?
Okay, first of all, I knew when I was really young. Like I knew when I was... I went to a Shakespeare play when I was, like a youth Shakespeare play when I was 7. I went to Love's Labor's Lost, and I turned to my mom afterwards and I say, I want to do that. Mm. And it was pretty much, that was it. I was a funny kid. I was a funny kid. And I think I was always told that, like, there's a very, like, funny story in our family that my mom would get calls from the preschool. They'd be like, Anna keeps telling jokes at nap time and she's keeping everyone up. Like, I was like 3 or 4 years old and I was just like cracking jokes and doing like a stand-up routine, and they're like, you actually have to talk to her. You actually have to talk to her because you need to nap. These are 3 and 4 year olds. Like, you can't just have
that. Is hilarious.
Yeah, so I think that I loved comedy, making people laugh. And I've done a lot of dramatic acting, but also making people laugh is like my favorite thing in the world. And that's where social media has come in. Really, it's almost very different from some of my, like, a lot of the content in my shows is very dramatic,
right?
But also I love comedy, so my hope is to not get like put in a box in either category. I think doing both is kind of my dream.
Yeah.
Because I love them in different ways.
Yeah,
it evokes different.
Went on your website and I watched some of your dramatic reels, and it was so interesting to see, because all I see like on your social media is like funny, and I was like, oh my gosh, she can do both.
Oh my god. thank you.
No, it was really good.
Thank you so much.
The drama was real.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Serving drama.
No, it was so good. So you have your show coming up in September.
Yeah.
Is there anything else in the works?
I have been on and off writing a pilot about my experiences at a women's residential mental health treatment center. Because, there's endless content in
just
that.
Very specific things that who people have gotten will immediately relate.
Yeah, and I also like, I want to eventually make my show like a short TV series, kind of the way that like Baby Reindeer was like a 6-episode thing, or like one of those. That would be, once I have the connections in the industry to be able to produce something like that, because you obviously you can't just do it randomly, you know, unless you had the crazy money or something. But yeah, I'm trying to, the acting industry in general is a little slow right now, so there's less auditions popping up. And so the best advice I ever got was, if you want to work, create your own work. So I hope to continue. I have another one woman show I wrote years ago that I want to bring back, which is about sexual trauma. And to give a little context is that I, when I was little, I was also stubborn. And one of our, like one of my childhood friends would always call me Annie Says No. Cause they call me, like my family like calls me Annie. And so like, you know, whatever I did, he'd be like, Annie says no. Cause I would just say no to everything. So the title is Annie Says No.
I love that.
Obviously the context of saying no to someone. Right. And so I wrote that a few years ago, but I want to bring that back as well. Cause I think that would be interesting also to see how my perspective has changed since I wrote it. Mm. You know, it's still just sitting in my computer. But every year that I've distanced from this stuff, every year it becomes funnier. Every year it becomes deeper.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it's hopefully working on that. But also, I have no idea. You never know what's next. I mean, even just, like, connecting with you, like, I didn't even know this existed. I'm so glad I do. Like, you just don't know who. It's so inspiring to see so many people doing something creative with their hardship.
Right. I love it.
You know,
I mean, just sorry you're having hardships, but
no, I mean, it's the pain that gave you understanding, you know? And I think that, we get the privilege of understanding and knowing ourselves on such a deeper level. I mean, I didn't know my body as well as I know it now.
Yeah.
And now it's like, sometimes doctors will like, one of my gastroenterologists once said, oh, you're like a Crohn's historian. She's like, I can remember every med I'd been on, every test, every this. I knew the dates down. Like, and sometimes doctors are like, oh, you knew what that enzyme was. How did you know that? And I'm like,
because I'd have become my own dang doctor.
Not my own, not my first rodeo. So
Yeah.
But we'll see what's on the horizon. I'm hoping that like unexpected things continue to happen and just make connections with good people and just, you know, get to know other people that are being creative in that way.
Yeah, I love that. And that's basically what the podcast is about. It's not about toxic positivity. Yeah. Like, oh, you're sick, just be positive.
Yeah. No, it's just going to walk. It'll be fine.
Yoga, meditation. Yeah, no, it's because like when everything in life is just handed to you, what does that lead to? Like, what can you become of yourself? I mean, obviously great for you if it happens to you. I'm not shitting on anyone where everything's handed to you. And I'm sure you live a beautiful life.
But I also can't connect to those people in the same way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, my dad always says, like, you don't leave a situation or experience where everything has gone well, learning something. When it doesn't go well, that's how you learn something.
Right.
So it's true. It's like, you're not going to be like, I'm so healthy. And now I understand the human experience. Like, you know, like that's not actually globally what goes on.
Right.
You know, and so it's just, it's kind of like, like we were talking about with the clubs. It's like, there's some clubs that, maybe I don't want to be in them. But also the overarching umbrella club is like, oh, this is a superpower, not a weakness.
Right. And the depth you will gain from being in this club.
Yeah, exactly.
So deep.
But I think that also connects to the comedy aspect is that comedy is just heightened drama. That's why so many comedic actors are such good dramatic actors, is that this is just elevated drama.
Right.
And so finding humor in it is what has saved me, to be honest. Like, it's so healing to be able to joke about it. I mean, there's so many funny things. I had a colorectal surgeon named Dr. Butcher. I had a gastroenterologist named Dr. Rechtman. I had a... At Tegan, I had a PCP named Dr. Boddy, B-O-D-D-I-E. I've had the crate, like, that you literally can't make this shit up. Like,
that?
It is insane. What do you mean your name's Dr. Butcher? Is this a lifetime bit that you're doing to then become a colorectal surgeon? Can you imagine the dedication of going to medical school and be like, my name's Dr. Butcher. I want to become a surgeon. I want to cut into people's colons. He should be literally giving a disclaimer on the, like, contract. It's like, we're going to respect HIPAA laws. We're going to send your medical records to your PCP. Also, I'm not going to kill you. Don't worry. You'll be fine. Like, you can't just You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's crazy.
That is
because he had to think about it. There's no way he didn't think about it.
And the doctor
Rechtman, R-E-C-T-M-A-N.
What kind of doctor were they?
Gastroenterologist.
Love that.
That's the best part. And once I was coming off anesthesia, and I was like, is that spelled like rectum? Because you know when you're off coming off anesthesia, and you're like, hey. Like, once I woke up from anesthesia, and the nurses were like, oh, so you're not Scottish anymore. And I was like, what does that mean? They were like, you were calling all of the nurses lassie. And you were just talking in a Scottish accent. And I said, I don't know how to do a Scottish accent. They were like, you did 5 minutes ago.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder if it was good. That's a hard accent. That's hilarious.
I don't even know. Like, I couldn't even attempt it right now or I'd embarrass myself. But they were all laughing. And I was like, oh, it's good to know that I'm funny when I'm coming off anesthesia.
You're going to have to film the next time. Well, hopefully you don't need to.
I know. I wish it wouldn't violate HIPAA. And then I'd be like, here's my phone for when I'm coming off.
Trust me, it'll be great content. This will be
good content. Exactly. Oh, no, this is good. We'll make it a collab.
Got it.
Me and the nurse doing a collab post on Instagram. Like,
oh, I'm not a social media. You will be.
You will be.
You will be.
I don't care if you have 2 followers. This is going to make you big, baby.
Oh, like, wait, that is so funny. No, I've heard of people coming out of anesthesia with, like, accents.
Yeah. Now I have too.
But you picked the hardest one. That is
hilarious. I literally don't even know how I did
Lassie.
That. I was like, Lassie. Like, I literally, they're like, why were you doing
that? That is.
And that's how I know I was a funny kid. Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I love all of that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll start to wrap it up because I can't believe how quickly the time went. Yeah. So we have come to the end.
No! Like, throw myself out.
Lock the door. We're not leaving.
I'm not letting you leave. I take over the podcast.
That's why you don't meet people on the internet. Just kidding. Anyways, I loved hearing your story.
Thank you for having me. It was so nice.
And I just really relate to you. With everything. I just... just a wonderful, beautiful person. Oh, and I'm so glad that you reached out to me and I reached out to you. And it's just so amazing.
Yeah, it's so cool. And it's so nice to talk to people who get it, you know? Yeah. It's so nice because I don't really have that at the time.
Yeah.
Most of my friends were just like living their lives, going to college, getting a job, like
in their prime.
In their prime and using that, or not using, going through that trajectory of the typical life of a young adult.
Right.
And that was hard, is like not seeing other people be able to do things that I couldn't do.
Right, exactly.
So it's so inspiring that you're doing this. This is so important. Yeah. So yeah, thank you for having me.
And what you're doing is great. I want to come see your show in September.
You should. Philly is not too far away.
My best friend lives in Philly. Like, we're going.
You should come. I have 4 performances in September. It's the 13th, the 20th, the 23rd, and the 27th.
So. I'm going to vlog my experience. I'm here. I'm seeing Anna.
You hop on stage and you're like, Lassie. And I'm like, not now.
I'm going to wear a shirt that says Lassie.
I'm going to see you in the audience and break character, break the fourth wall, be like, hey, girl.
Oh my God.
You're there.
That's amazing. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you. Wait. Where can people find you?
Okay. My handle is at the Anna Snapp. So that's TheAnnaSnapp. Or, you know, find me. DM me. I'm on Instagram and TikTok. I also I live in Philly. I'm not going to tell you my address. You can figure it out if you want to find me, but also not because the internet's insane. Unless you call me Lassie.
Yeah. Just kidding. Let's call me Lassie. All right, Lassies. We'll see you next week.
And everyone like that.
And scene.
And scene.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chronically Positive Podcast. I know it's been a while since we've chatted. I'm going to try to get these out a little bit more consistently, but thank you for giving me grace. Thanks again for supporting, and please leave a review, subscribe. It really helps get these stories out to people that can benefit from them.